Call this March 2023 meeting of the Arizona State Board of Optometry to order at 8:02. Roll call. Ms. Whelan, will you please call roll?
Thank you. Dr. Mastoris? Dr. Mastoris? Noted absent. Dr. Cohen?
Present.
Dr. Carpenter?
Present.
Dr. Brown? Dr. Brown? Noted absent. Ms. Galan?
Present.
Mr. Hamed?
Present.
Dr. Moffitt?
Present.
Ms. Baskin?
Present. Good morning.
Good morning. And Margaret Whelan, Executive Director, is present. We have a quorum, Madam Chair.
Great. Thank you. Agenda item C, Board Purpose Statement. The board meeting statement of purpose, a license to practice optometry in this state is a privilege granted by the Arizona legislature through the Optometric Practice Act. In 1907, on behalf of the state, people of the state, the legislature created the Arizona State Board of Optometry to regulate the practice of the profession of optometry, issue licensure where appropriate, and in general assure the public that the practice of optometry will be conducted with reasonable skill and safety by persons who meet the curriculum requirements to hold a Doctor of Optometry degree from an accredited optometry school. To enforce the Optometric Practice Act, the board reviews applications for licensure and complaints relative to the conduct of its licensed optometrists and is charged with determining if the provisions of the Optometric Practice Act are met. In addition, the board may promulgate rules and policies in conformity with the stated purpose of the board and the mission as mandated by law. As of January 1, 2019, all board meetings are digitally recorded with the recordings of the audio available to the public on the board's website under the consumer information link. Agenda item D, declarations of conflicts of interest, if any, for the meeting. Are there any conflicts to declare today?
This is Dr. Carpenter. I just mentioned that under complaints with Dr. Elge, he's a classmate of mine and a friend.
And Dr. Carpenter, this is Mona Baskin, and you have no bias. You can be fair and impartial, or are you going to?
I can.
Oh. Okay. All right. If you just want to state that for the record.
Okay. So is it not necessary to recuse myself for that part?
Well, if you feel that you cannot be fair and impartial, or if there's an appearance of impropriety, you could recuse yourself. That would be your decision.
Okay. All right. Do I need to state that now, or?
You could state it now, yes, because it's agendized for declaration of conflicts of interest. So.
Okay. Yeah, I think in this instance, even though I know him, I feel like I could be non-biased and impartial.
Okay. Thank you.
Agenda item E, President's Report. I thought I would just give a quick update that all the board members now have been signed up for the CLEAR board member training, and that many of us have already taken the first class. Agenda item F, review, discussion, and possible action on investigative reviews complaints. Number one, Darren Elg, Dr. Darren Elg, IR number 202309. I'd like to state for the record, as this is a virtual and telephonic meeting, that all participants should preface their comments with their name first, so everyone knows who's speaking, and that to refer to the patients by their initials only. IR number 202309, is patient SF present, or their parent? And Dr. Elg, is Dr. Elg present? Okay. I'd ask for a board summary first of this complaint. Anyone like to offer a summary? Dr. Carpenter, well, actually, Dr. Cohen, would you be willing to offer a summary? Oh, you're on mute. Dr. Cohen.
Yeah. Would it be possible for me to do the other one? Because I misplaced, I know the circumstance of the other one, 4-year-old, but may I ask to do the other complaint from KF?
I'll do this one. Dr. Elg saw patient SF for an eye exam. Patient SF is a 4-year-old The complaint was filed by the patient's mother. It seems she had no complaints with Dr. Elg, but with the purchase of the glasses and the timing of the glasses order, the internet connection at the office failed and the frame was not ordered, and the order from the supplier was not completed in a timely fashion. Patient's mother called after a few weeks, and it was discovered, I think, at that point that the frame wasn't really ordered on time and that needed to be ordered. And then when the frame came in, had to be sent to, still to the lab for the lenses. And patient's mother was unhappy with that delay and then also with communication from the office. Okay, so that is my summary. As the patient and the doctor are not here, I'll just open this up for board discussion. Any comments from the board?
Yes, this is Dr. Cohen. Although clearly there was an inconvenience and an error made, I see no evidence of any violation of the Arizona statutes.
Thank you, Dr. Carpenter. Any comments?
This is Dr. Carpenter. I agree with Dr. Cohen. I do like the fact that the office did resolve the error and even some compensation. So yes, while this is a frustrating type of a thing, it does happen in the course of business, and no parts of the Optometric Act were violated.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hamed. Any comments?
Oh yeah, this just sounds like it's an honest mistake, and I agree with the two gentlemen as well, actually, in that this complaint should be dismissed out of hand.
Okay, Ms. Galan, comments?
Yeah, I agree as well. I think that there wasn't really anything that rose to the level of like unprofessional conduct or something like that.
Okay. I agree. Would anyone like to make a motion?
This is Dr. Carpenter. I move that we dismiss this complaint.
This is Sammy, second.
Any further discussion? Okay. Then we've had a motion to dismiss the complaint and a second. I'll open this up for a vote. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Yes.
Ms. Galan?
Aye.
Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 5-0. Complaint F2, Brian Sturgill, Dr. Sturgill, IR number 202310. Is patient GT present? Okay, and Dr. Sturgill present? No? So I'll open this up for board summary. Dr. Cohen, would you like to summarize for me?
Madam President, I apologize. It was the other case that I had the information in front of me. This one I just now pulled up. My apologies.
Okay.
Do you want me to give it a shot anyway?
Sure.
Okay. Or someone else can do it.
Volunteer.
I could do it. This is Dr. Carpenter. I got you. Let's see. So this was patient GT, and apparently she had an eye exam there in Yuma at a different facility a week prior, but then went to this facility to see Dr. Sturgill because she wasn't happy with the care she received the week prior. And her main complaint was, and it sounds like in both instances, she felt like she was kind of rushed through the exam, and that they disregarded her history. It sounds like she was pretty adamant that she required the minus 175 and the 75 without the astigmatism correction. And felt like the doctor didn't want to honor her wishes, but rather just kind of rushed through and said, this is what you need and this is what we're going to do. In reviewing the doctor's statement and the exam notes, Dr. Sturgill, throughout the exam actually found some cataracts that were decreasing the visual acuity and was trying to improve the acuity by correcting for the astigmatism, seeing if they can get a little bit better vision as opposed to just going with the spherical equivalent as she was used to. And said, let's try these and let's see you back for a follow-up. And an appointment was made, but the patient did not return. And then the next thing he heard was this complaint from the board. So his side is that he felt like he took time with her and was seeking to find a way to help make her vision even better, as opposed to leaving her with what she had had. But then she was frustrated and didn't go back.
Okay. Board discussion. Any comments from the board?
Yes, this is Dr. Cohn. In looking at the original complaint from the patient, it says deceptive advertising or statements. Did I miss something? I didn't see anything in the complaint that would list that. And the chronic dry eye and astigmatism is checked off as another thing that was done. And yet, if I'm reading correctly, Dr. Sturgis is the one talking about both of those things.
Dr. Carpenter, did you want to make a comment?
Yeah, I was just going to say, yeah, I was looking for those same things as far as the deceptive advertising. The only thing I could see was at the very beginning, the patient stated she went to Walmart and there was no indication that he was not a Walmart doctor, but ran his businesses 2 days only from a Walmart facility. So there really aren't Walmart doctors, right? They're all considered independent contractors, the way I understand it. And so that was probably more a misunderstanding than anything trying to be deceptive.
I also, this is Dr. Moffitt, my perception of that too was that maybe because she wanted monovision and didn't quite end up with monovision. That was I couldn't quite tell. But as far as the deceptive advertising went, I'll offer my comments real quick too on this. So I thought, so patient GT, there were a couple things here. She wanted the spherical equivalent monovision, but she came in uncorrected, it looked like, from the notes. There were no visual acuities collected with the patient in her current lenses. And so there was no way to really judge what her current level of correction was with her contacts. And so that leaves a question mark, at least in the doctor's mind, how well she's functioning and how well she's doing. And then I do think that I think there was a lack of communication here at some point, or a breakdown of communication, in that what she wanted wasn't necessarily given to her. However, the doctor also has a responsibility to make sure the patient can legally drive and do other things like this. And so without knowing what she could currently see, and he was trying to best correct her, and he knew she had a limited ability with regard to the cataract already, or some impact on her functional vision because cataract, I don't see anything wrong with what he did. Unfortunately, she should have followed up. If she was unhappy, she should have kept the follow-up appointment so that she could convey that, so he could measure her acuities and the two of them could talk and then decide how to proceed going forward. So that was my perception, at least as far as how those things went. Further comments from the board? Ms. Galan, any comments?
Sorry, I'm muted. No, not at this time.
Okay. Mr. Hamed, any comments?
I don't see a violation of the Optometrical Act, so I think, therefore, this complaint should be dismissed.
Okay.
And I agree with your comments, Madam President.
Thank you. Further comments, Dr. Carpenter, Dr. Cohen?
I agree with what you had said, and it is tough in these situations where the patient's pretty adamant about what they want, But like you said, some sort of breakdown in communication. And it sounds like to me, she had just had a similar experience a week ago at a different place. And so this may have been just kind of the culmination of her frustration, between the two different places and whatnot. So yeah, I believe the complaint should be dismissed as well. There's no violations here.
Okay. Dr. Cohen?
Are we prepared to make a motion on this?
Certainly.
I move that the complaint IR202310 be dismissed.
Is there a second?
Excuse me, Dr. Moffitt. Dr. Cohen, is it due to lack of violation of the Optometric Practice Act?
Ms. Whalen, it is due to the lack of evidence of violation of the Optometric Act. Thank you.
Is there a second?
I'll second it. This is Diva Galan.
Okay. Any further discussion? Okay. We'll vote. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Galan?
Aye.
Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 5-0. Margaret, I see that we've been joined by an additional party. Do we want to summarize or give any history on the previous complaint? I'm wondering if this is to do with Dr. L's complaint.
Yes, thank you, Madam President. I believe AF is here for Dr. Elch. That complaint was heard previously before Dr. Sturgill's complaint. And after a thorough review and discussion, the board has voted to dismiss the complaint because there was no findings of violation of the Optometric Practice Act. Ms. KF, if you want to stay on, our meeting is a little bit long, or Dr. Moffitt, you can do call to the public. So if you do want to make any comments regarding this, you can make comments during calls to the public. And also the recording will be posted right after the meeting. So online under our board meetings, you can listen to the board's discussion on this complaint as well.
Thank you.
Agenda item G, review, discussion, and possible action on pending endorsement applications pursuant to ARS 32-1723. Number one, Ozan Jaffrey, OD. So Dr. Jaffrey had a previous malpractice suit settled against him without an admission of guilt or wrongdoing. Are there any concerns amongst the board members about granting his license? I'd like to open this up for discussion. Any comments, Dr. Carpenter?
You're muted, Dr. Carpenter.
I think he's looking at the material. Dr. Cohen?
Yeah, there we go.
Okay.
Sorry, I was looking at it here. No, I don't have any comments.
Okay. Dr. Cohen, any comments?
Not at this time, thank you.
Okay. Mr. Hamed, any comments regarding granting Dr. Jaffrey's license?
No comment here, Madam President.
Okay. Ms. Galan, any comments?
Not at this time.
Okay. As Dr. Moffitt, I'll state for the record, I don't have any reservations about granting Dr. Jaffrey's license. So if someone would like to make a motion.
Hi, this is Dr. Cohen. I make a motion that the pending license for Dr. Jaffrey be accepted by the Arizona State Board of Optometry.
This is Sammy. I'll second.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Okay. We'll vote. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Galan?
Aye.
Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 5-0. Agenda item H, review, discussion, and possible action on application for volunteer health services under ARS 32-3217. Number one, Dr. Glenn Griffin is applying for a volunteer license in the state of Arizona. Any concerns or discussion regarding granting Dr. Griffin a volunteer license? Dr. Carpenter, any comments?
No comments, no concerns.
Dr. Griffin, or excuse me, sorry. That just stuck in my mouth.
Yes.
Dr. Cohen, somehow I said Dr. Griffin. Dr. Cohen, any comments about Dr. Griffin?
Yes, this is Dr. Cohen. I'll be doing a name change as soon as this meeting is over. In looking at it, if I'm reading it correctly, read it correctly, it's for his work being done up in Cottonwood. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. No, I have no objection. And it says, as a matter of fact, he underlined under section 12D, free medical clinic. So I applaud him for his work that he wants to do.
Yes. Mr. Hammond, any comments?
No comments at all. I'd be fine with approving the application.
Okay. Ms. Galan?
Yep, me too. I agree.
Okay. Would anyone like to make a motion to grant Dr. Griffin's volunteer license application?
This is Dr. Carpenter. I motion that we grant the volunteer license to Dr. Griffin.
Okay. Is there a second?
This is Dr. Cohen. I'll second that.
Any further discussion? Okay. So we'll vote. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Galan, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
I also vote aye, so motion passes 5-0. Agenda item I, review discussion and possible action regarding compliance, revision, or termination of probationary order. Agenda item number one there, Kelsey Stevens, OD, related to IR number 202213. So Dr. Stevens has submitted her 10 hours of CE per the probationary order, and the final auditor's report is also in. To me, this appears she has satisfied the conditions of the order. Are there any comments from the board regarding Dr. Stevens' order or satisfaction of the order?
Yes, hi, this is Dr. Cohen, also known as Dr. Griffin. I'd like to say that I commend Dr. Stevens for the handling of this, because Dr. Stevens appeared to take the process very seriously and very thoroughly, and has complied with all requests by the board.
Any comments, Dr. Carpenter?
I agree. Looks like she's doing a great job and doing everything that's been asked of her.
Okay. Mr. Hamed, any comments?
I'll take the recommendation of the auditor. The paperwork has been shown, so I'm fine with approving her application.
For clarification, Mr. Hammond, it's not an application. She actually has a disciplinary order.
Excuse me, I'm a disciplinary. I'm worried, okay. Right. I'm fine with the recommendation of the auditor. Yeah, I'm fine with it.
Okay. Ms. Galan, comments?
No, I'm okay with it as well.
Okay. For my part, I also believe Dr. Stevens has followed and completed the conditions of the order. And I commend her on her good attitude, actually, and her interactions with our executive director look very positive, and so I appreciate that. And would anyone like to make a motion to accept the conditions of her order having been met?
Hi, this is Dr. Cohen. I'll make a motion that Dr. Stevens has met the conditions set by the board and has completed the required process.
This is Sammy. I'll second Dr. Cohen's motion.
Thank you.
Madam President, yes. May I address Dr. Cohen? Did you, in your motion, would you like to terminate the order or continue the order?
Thank you.
She has substantially complied. I just need to know what.
As such, I think that the order should be terminated, as having been completed.
Mr. Hamed, do you second still?
I sure do.
Okay. Any further discussion? All right. So we'll vote on accepting and terminating the probationary order for Dr. Stevens. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Galan?
I get off mute.
Aye.
Thank you. Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 5-0. Agenda item J, Executive Director approval of new license applications pursuant to ARS 32-3123. So the following 1A through 1G were approved between February and March of 2023. Agenda item K, review, discussion, and possible action on pending license applications awaiting fingerprint reports, request for board approval pursuant to ARS 32-1730. So the following applicants, 1 through 13, have been waiting for their fingerprint reports to come in, but they are still delayed. And we can move to accept their licenses as is and then be brought back in front of the board if the fingerprint report shows an anomaly. Is there any discussion regarding approving these licensees?
Madam Chair, this is Sebby. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make a motion that we approve applications 1 through 13 pending the outcome of their fingerprint clearance applications.
Thank you. I think it's not pending, right? We accept them correct. As is, and then they're reintroduced to the board.
Let me rephrase the word. Let me rephrase the motion then. Like, move that we accept applications 1 through 13 and accept them as is.
Thank you. Is there a second?
This is Dr. Carpenter. I'll second that.
Thank you. Any further discussion from the board? Okay. So we'll vote. We've had a motion to approve licensees 1 through 13. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Galan?
Aye.
Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
I also vote aye. So motion passes 5-0. Agenda item L, review, discussion, and possible action on approval of testing centers for proctoring of jurisprudence exam pursuant to AAC R4-21-203C. So we have a list here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of testing centers that need approval to sit testing center for proctoring of the jurisprudence exam. Are there any concerns or comments about any of these testing centers? Okay, I hear no comments. Would anyone like to make a motion to accept them as the jurisprudence exam center?
This is Dr. Carpenter. I motion that we accept these testing centers. Do I need to list them off?
I think just saying 1 through 5 is acceptable.
Okay. I motion that we approve these proposed testing centers, 1 through 5, as valid testing sites for board testing.
Okay, thank you. Is there a second?
I'll second that. This is Steve Galan.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Okay, so we've had a motion to approve these testing sites as a center for the jurisprudence exam. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Galan?
Aye.
Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 5-0. Agenda item M, review, discussion, and possible action on approval of continuing education as provided by ARS 32-1704D and AAC R4-21-210. So this was originally submitted for approval for continuing education, but it's currently been withdrawn to be resubmitted at a later date. I believe no further discussion needs to take place. Agenda item N, review, discussion, and possible action regarding sunset review agency continuation. Item number one, SB 1075 Optometry Board continuation. Ms. Whalen, would you like to discuss?
I would, thank you. Madam Chair and members of the board, Senate Bill 1075 is our continuation bill, which is part of the big audit that we've been going through. This is where the legislature recommends that our agency continue to exist as an agency, as a regulatory board for the next 8 years at a maximum. back in January, our continuation was heard and by committee of the whole. And we were granted a proposed 6-year extension. The committees were not giving out any 8-year extensions. So the bill has not been heard since the second read on January 23rd. The last date to hear bills in the Chamber of Origin was last week. So, I mean, on the surface, I'm a little nervous because this is unusual, but we have lots and lots of freshman legislators and we have a new governor. So none of the continuation bills have moved forward. I have some colleague boards, dental and naturopathic and funeral board, who also have continuation bills, and we're all just kind of stagnant right now. So there's been a little bit of rumor that it's possible that maybe they're looking at a consolidation type of some kind, but I haven't really heard any substantial information on that. So that's all it is just kind of a rumor right now. So I'm confident that it'll move forward and that our agency will be continued. We've already been around for 117 years. I highly doubt we would be sunsetted at this time. So it's just about the process, I think, at this moment. Senate Bill 1227, that's our proposed language cleanup bill. It was submitted and approved to move forward by Senator Shope, who is the sponsor of the bill. Meanwhile, ophthalmology has come in and opposed the bill vehemently, stating that we were trying to expand our scope, which, as you know, is not true. And I have been going back and forth with ophthalmology, unfortunately. They're still opposing it. They've pulled our bill twice. It's been a big challenge. We are getting a little bit of assistance from the AZOA with their lobbyist, Don Isaacson, has been extremely gracious in helping the board when needed. And we're just trying to facilitate an agreement. You know, we are an independent profession with an independent regulatory board. We don't need ophthalmology's permission, oversight, or other, or any other professions to tell us how to do our business, to run our business, as we say. So it's really unfortunate that ophthalmology is kind of blocking our bill at the moment. It's still a work in progress. It did not get heard also before the deadline to be heard. So if it does go through this session, it most likely will be a striker under some other bill number, which I do hope happens, but I have been feverishly emailing Senator Shope and Representative Montenegro, who are the chairs for the House and Senate Health and Human Services Committees, respectively. And I'm seriously disappointed that it's come to this, politically speaking, because, you know, like I said, this is just a language cleanup and we desperately need a lot of the language that's in there that's antiquated, you know, updated. So it's also pursuant to the audit. I'm not sure what ophthalmology doesn't understand about the auditor general's requiring us to change language. So that's kind of the ugly status of the bill, unfortunately. Those of you who've ever joined the AZOA, you know, on their legislative quest for scope expansion, it usually does get a little exciting during legislative session. But this bill, I felt, was really innocuous, so it shouldn't have caused this kind of, I guess, uproar communication from the profession of ophthalmology. So I'm keeping an eye on it, but at the moment it hasn't moved and it has not been put back on an agenda. So I'm still just communicating with the powers that be to see if we can push our bill through, because we desperately need these changes. It's kind of all I can say. I mean, I'm seriously disappointed, as you can tell, because I'm just disappointed that we're not going to get what we need because, you know, people don't agree. So, but that's the game, and that's how we, you know, just have to move forward. So if it's not this year, hopefully it'll be next year. But I would like to see it come through as a striker this session. I would really like that. So that concludes my report on those two bills, Madam President.
Thank you, Ms. Whalen. I thought I would just add for the other board members that were at our last meeting too, Margaret and I met with kind of a collection of folks, including the, I guess she's the lobbyist for the ophthalmology local society, the Southern Arizona Ophthalmologic Society, I think. Anyway, but that's who's challenging our bill. And it's unfortunate they're claiming that we're changing the meaning of surgery and changing the language regarding that, which we have offered to keep the language exactly the same, but they are still not cooperating. Another issue that they had was with the change in language around immunosuppressants, even though we already have oral steroids. They're claiming that we were trying to gain oral steroids. So this is the conversation and how it went back and forth. And of course, we assured them the board's just trying to do board business, not change scope expansion for the profession. But it wasn't a very productive meeting, I guess, how I would describe it. So that'll conclude my comments for the board. Agenda item O, executive director's report. Ms. Whalen.
Thank you. I appreciate your comments, by the way, on that, Dr. Moffitt. Item O, number one, the budget. As you may recall, our fiscal year 23 appropriation is $298,800. As of January 31st, 2023, our beginning cash balance was $559,517, with an ending cash balance of $558,582. 58.33% of the fiscal year has elapsed. Remember, our fiscal is July 1st to June 30th, with the board spending at 51.15%. Staff activity and updates for January and February. January and February. I processed 103 renewal applications, 30 new applications were received, 10 new licenses were issued, 47 phone calls returned, and 2,150 emails were received and answered. I don't know what it is about the email, but nobody calls hardly anymore. They email or they say I can text them, so I'm working on that. Sentia update for e-licensing. We are moving right along with our new online system. Our original rule update was in May. We're a little bit behind, partially because of me and partially because of Sentia. My role in that is I want to update our letters that go out, like our deficiency notices, the renewal deficiencies. A lot of the letters that were in Salesforce currently that are in Salesforce are they're outdated, like the statutes are not correct, the verbiage isn't correct. I'm not sure where Salesforce got that data when they created our letters, but I don't want to submit those same bad letters to Sentia, and I just have not had a moment between the audit and the legislative session and the licensing to kind of make that a priority. So I'm getting to that point because it's definitely becoming a priority now, so I want to make sure we get our system rolled out. I would like to do it by June 30th. That's the end of the fiscal year, and we have some budgetary constraints, actually, with Salesforce. We also have some support issues because the DSM said we're not going to support it after June 30th. So, of course, the Department of Administration, Asset Division, that's just strategic, and IT people, they're working with Salesforce too, because we're not the only board that's in that situation. In fact, we're kind of on the good end of that. There's a lot of boards that won't even be ready until December. So not to worry, the system won't go offline, but it may be a little costly to maintain that support. So we definitely don't want to have that happen. The licensing coordinator position, that position is the responsibility of the executive director, but I did just want to give you an update. The previous licensing admin had left in September, and I just have been trying to decide what I wanted to do with the position. We definitely are busy with the licensing, and I think what occurred to me after the last licensing admin that we had, Ms. Chavez, after Paula Hollins had retired after 15 years, was that the position really needed to be updated from the standpoint of I think it needed a higher skill set and knowledge of technology, and the position just hadn't been updated actually since 2000. And prior to that, I think the position wasn't updated since like 1984. So I actually updated and revised the position description. That is at classification and compensation within the state so that anyone who goes and looks at that position at class and comp can see, you know, what our licensing coordinator position is. It's still a grade 17, but I actually used the predictive index job model. I don't know if you're familiar with the predictive index. It's kind of similar to the old Myers-Briggs tests, if any of you are familiar with those. So they're sort of like a psychological-based testing for employees or for people to see, you know, what their work style is, their management style, how they accept things, how they, work their day, things like that. So it was very, very beneficial to use that predictive index job model. So I feel like I've created a very good position for the licensing coordinator to support the agency and to support me as the executive director, or this position, not me personally, but the position. And the salary is going to be increased from previous, it is a grade 17, which I apologize, I didn't get the exact salary range, but I think that salary range is 31,000 to 55,000 or something like that. So I had lots of discussion with human resources and they said, you got to pay your people, which I absolutely agree. But historically, you know, this position was a little bit more entry level. So my goal was to kind of bring that up to not entry level. I need somebody that has either some licensing experience or the capability to be more independent, you know, and confident or continuous, you know, worker, not just when the work is there. So, just a little overview of the licensing. Oh, and so I did interview people this week. I actually interviewed like my top four candidates. I got a lot of good response to the job posting. It was posted earlier in February, and it just closed on the 27th of February. So, I'm in the process and I hope to have a licensing administrator in the next 2 to 4 weeks. So that will be very, very helpful to me. Cause as you can see by the staff activity, the board is very busy and we're heading into our busy season as the new graduates are coming out. So they'll all want to be licensed the same day they graduate. Student loan for calling. Okay. Legislative session. I am going to do a little bit of a bill review today, but, I'm going to start by saying this is the 56th legislature first regular session, which began on Monday, January 9th, 2023. Yesterday was day 53 of session. 1,528 bills have been introduced, 809 in the House, and 719 in the Senate. I'm not going to do all these bills. I'm just going to, I have picked out a few of the bills that I feel are pertinent to either our board, all regulatory boards, or at least the health regulatory boards. So House Bill 2144, that is open meetings, capacity, posting, and violation. Basically, it says that the public body who meets in person has to have sufficient space to seat all the people that come. I don't know why we need a law that says that. I think that's obvious. But nonetheless, it's still in caucus. That was the last piece that was heard was in caucus on February 21st in the House, and it hasn't moved forward since then. House Bill 2157, medical malpractice statutes of limitation, that would only allow for a malpractice claim to be filed within a certain amount of time. It can't be 10 years later when you're thinking about it, that kind of thing. That has only had a second read in the House on January 18th and hasn't moved forward since then. House Bill 2190, the health profession fingerprint cards and websites. This would be starting January 1st, 2024, an application for initial licensure, license renewal, reciprocal license, reinstatement, or any type of limited license shall possess a valid fingerprint clearance card. That has only had a second read in the House on January 24th. I think this bill is not written properly. So I think administratively, it's a horrible bill and it would be very challenging for us as a regulatory board to enforce. And all of my colleagues are in agreement that, you know, the bill would be fine if it was just, you know, tweaked a little bit, but the way it's written, it wouldn't be a successful law. In our professional opinion. So hopefully it doesn't move forward. It hasn't. So, you know, like I said, bills can't really be heard, but they can always prop up someplace else. House Bill 2254, rulemaking and regulatory costs. This actually was transmitted to the Senate on March 1st. So this states that if a rule is estimated to increase regulatory costs in excess of $500,000 or have an adverse impact on economic growth, that we can't have a rule that says that. Requires an agency no later than 30 days before the next legislative session to submit to the rule committee proposed rules to the legislature. That's also, we have the governor's regulatory review council. I don't know why the legislature would want to get involved, but allows any legislator to introduce legislation to ratify the proposed rule, specifies the rule is exempt from the 120-day time limit for an agency to submit the rule to GRC, restricts an agency from filing a final rule with Secretary of State before getting legislative approval. Again, that would really, really hold up the rules process because the legislature, as you know, only meets 5 months of the year. So, you know, if you get stuck promulgating rules and you're in August, you're kind of out of luck if you haven't had it previously approved by the legislature under this proposed law. Stipulates the legislative ratification of a rule does not apply to emergency rules, and assess an applicable rule beginning on the effective date is void and unenforceable unless it's adopted through the legislative ratification. Again, I feel like that's a lot more red tape than is necessary. I really hope the bill doesn't go through the Senate. House Bill 2377, Public Officers Lobbying Prohibition. This was also transmitted to the Senate on February 23rd. States that a public officer cannot represent any person for compensation. So I'm the designated lobbyist, public lobbyist for our board. I have my own lobbyist ID. The board also has a lobbyist ID. I just cannot receive additional compensation for lobbying for either this board or another board. I don't know why that needed clarification, but apparently it did. House Bill 2429, occupational licenses, convictions. That has only had a second read in the Senate on March 1st. It prohibits state agencies from denying a regular or provisional occupational license to an individual convicted of a misdemeanor or felony offense, except if the person was convicted of one of the following: a dangerous crime against children, a serious offense, or a violent or aggravated felony. And it requires DPS to issue a fingerprint clearance card to that person. Senate Bill 1014, that is our what's not our bill. It is a bill affecting our board. Our board has opposed it. If you recall at the last meeting, we chose to oppose this bill. That's the eyeglass prescriptions. It was transmitted to the House on February 14th. Whoops. Sorry, I just lost my place. Sorry. Here we go. It was transmitted to the House and has had a second read in the House already on February 28th. This was the one that specified that prescriptions for ophthalmic lenses were going to be 2 years unless there was a medical or ocular condition of the patient. I just see lots of bad things for this bill. I have sent emails to Representative Montenegro in the House because the bill is sponsored by another legislator from Commerce Committee. But I had just kind of laid out the reasons that I felt like this bill should not be moved forward because we already have, just to reiterate, we already have our guidelines set forth by the AOA. That is what we follow, not just our board, but the boards across the 50 states and even some of the Canadian provinces follow that. And it has insurance implications. As we discussed last time, it didn't address children's eye exams or pediatric eye exams and things like that. So I'm keeping an eye on it. Hopefully my argument was compelling enough to Mr. Montenegro that he just pulled the bill because I did ask him to pull the bill. So we'll see what happens there. Senate Bill 1087, professional licensure fees, waiver and reduction. This is another ugly, ugly, horrible bill that we collectively as executive directors are hoping does not pass, but it was transmitted to the House on February 8th and had a second read in the House on February 28th. This law, it's a little complicated, so I apologize, but it's kind of how it was written. It requires a regulatory entity that determines its licensing fund ending balance would exceed 50% of its fund appropriation to provide a one-time waiver or reduction from licensure or certification renewal fees to reduce the balance in its licensing fund to below 50% of its appropriation. So basically, if the state feels that we have too much money in our fund, which is generated by our licensees and our applicants, if it exceeds 50% of that appropriation, we have to revert the funds back, or we have to do the fee reduction. So like, say for the 2025 renewal period, we either wouldn't charge a renewal fee or it would be reduced to like $50. That is why none of us want to have that. We all need our money. So I don't know why this would even be a good thing. We're not in the general fund. We don't take general fund monies. So there are some other things in that bill. So I encourage you to kind of look at that, but I'll keep you posted. But that's kind of the big gist of it, was the reduction in fees. Dental board was forced to do that quite a few years ago, and they've never really recovered. So I really hope that it's not a bill that gets passed.
Ms. Whalen, this is Dr. Cohen. May I ask you a quick question? My recollection in the past is that whether it's, I don't know if it was the governor or the legislature, was able to sweep many of the accounts. Is that still within their auspices to do that?
Yes.
Even though it's not their money.
Correct. Yes. And last time when it happened, just for informational purposes, Dr. Cohen and members of the board, our board did file, it wasn't really a lawsuit, but we did file through the Arizona Optometric Association, actually, because they also fought for it. They were very upset because it's their money as well and your money. And we were unsuccessful in getting our money back. So we basically said this was unlawful, unethical at best, but unlawful. And we did not prevail on that. None of us did. A few of us state boards had chosen to do that, but they kind of just said, sorry, because we were swept down to $10,000.
So one follow-up question again, this is Dr. Cohen, Ms. Whalen. Is it then, do you see it just from your experience then as a possibility if the bill stalls, somebody would make a move, or it's possible they would make a move in the absence of a true bill to do so as they've done before? The risk is still there?
Definitely. The risk is definitely there. I'm not sure why, this route would be taken as opposed to just doing a fund sweep. I almost feel like this was sort of a preemptive way for, the legislature to say, this will prevent all of you from, building your funds, but I don't understand why we can't build our funds. That's the whole point. And as you can see, we don't have an exorbitant amount. I mean, the whole purpose of having a fund balance is should something happen to the revenue, for whatever reason, not due to something like this, but, the board could sustain itself for 2 to 3 years or 5 years, things like that. So.
Thank you, Ms. Whalen.
Of course. Hopefully I answered your question, Dr. Cohen. Senate Bill 1176. Again, I don't know why this is a bill. Health professionals, address and confidentiality. We already have in our statutes that you are allowed to have a confidential address. We won't release that to the public. This was transmitted to the House on February 16th and had a second read in the House on February 28th. So we will continue to keep your confidential addresses confidential regardless. Senate Bill 1255, regulatory costs, rulemaking, and ratification. This was transmitted to the House on March 1st and already had a first read on March 2nd, which was yesterday. It prohibits for a proposed rule that is estimated to increase regulatory costs by $50,000 or more within 5 years after implementation, a proposed rule from becoming effective until the legislature enacts legislation ratifying the rule. Requires the agencies to submit the proposed rule to the committee within 30 days before the next legislative session. It's similar to the other bill. And again, I don't want the rules tied to the legislature. I think that's a conflict of interest, first of all, because the legislators make the statutes that give us authority. That gives us further authority to promulgate rules to support those statutes. So my two cents. Senate Bill 1333, this is a health professionals database, including license revocations. It was transmitted to the House on February 20th, had a second read in the House on February 28th, 2023. It requires health profession regulatory boards to report to DHS the revocation of a health professional's license or certification and all license and certification revocations that occurred between July 1st, 2019 and July 1st, 2024. It also requires DHS by July 1st, 2024 to create a searchable online database posted on its website that at a minimum contains the names of the health professionals who've had a license or certification revoked, suspended, or suspended within the preceding 5 years, the date of the revocation, and the health profession regulatory board that revoked it. I'm not totally against it. I mean, I think a centralized database is this kind of thing, but we do have our National Practitioner Data Bank that's not accessible to the public, but it's always public information. It's on our website. It's in our minutes. People can call the board, ask for copies of the order for disciplinary actions or suspensions, revocations, or any action taken by the board. So that's an interesting bill. Senate Bill 1386, Occupational Licensure, Fee Waiver and Appropriation. That's another bill. Anytime we see the word waiver, I start to sweat. This actually only has been in caucus in the Senate since February 14th and has not had any movement. But basically, it prohibits a regulatory board or agency that regulates a licensee from charging any fee for applications, initial licensure, license renewal, temporary license, or examinations relating to the license in fiscal years 24 and 25. So it would be kind of a temporary bill that would prohibit us from charging fees for those 2 years. So, and actually the bill's quite lengthy, but you can get online and read that one if you want. Senate Bill 1650, Auditor General, Duties and Access. This had a third read on March 2nd in the Senate. I haven't seen it. It's been transferred anyplace else as of yesterday. So this would require the Office of the Auditor General to conduct annual rather than biennial financial and compliance audits. They would be required to conduct a performance audit 5 years rather than 10 years. Requires JLBC, which is the Joint Legislative Budget Committee, their staff, to notify members of legislature as soon as practicable of the cost of conducting any special audit required by legislation. So it's just a little more, I guess, clamped down on the Auditor General's office. There's also a lengthy bill, so if you want to get in and read that information. And that's the report for the bills that are most pertinent to us. I appreciate your time and listening. I know it's not probably terribly exciting, but item number six, future agenda items. I actually do have one because I failed to put it on this agenda as planned. And that is at the last meeting, we discussed the telehealth application. I forgot to ask for the fee because a lot of the other agencies, you know, it's a one-time fee. So I would like to agendize that for next month or next meeting. But are there any other future agenda items that anybody wants to see on the next agenda?
None from me.
Okay. And future board meeting dates. As I said, we've had six meetings this year so far. But I was thinking, if it pleases the board, I mean, we could meet on Friday, April 7th. I do have a couple of complaints that have come in. But other than that, I mean, as far as board business and things like that, it's really up to the board.
Okay. Any comments from the board? How is April 7th? It's April 7th or moving on to May, right?
Right. I think it'll be May 5th after that.
See, April 7th is Good Friday, I see, Madam President.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
It is. I know I'll be traveling that day, so I won't be available, but.
Yeah, why don't we just postpone that one and just look towards May 5th?
Okay. Ms. Whalen, members of the board, Dr. Moffitt, I have a conflict with May 5th, but I could possibly get somebody as a substitute.
I'll be out of town on May 5th and I will be unable to attend.
Is a different day in May available, like May the 12th? Is that an option or no?
It is for me, Ms. Baskin.
Let me look. Hold on.
I kind of feel like that's another one of your board meeting date. I mean.
Yeah, hold on. Let me see. May 19th.
May 12th. May 12th.
Yeah, hold on. Let me. I have all these calendars, so let me check them out. So far, yes, May 12th, I am free. And I'm also free on, I do agree, it is Good Friday on April 7th, but I am also free that day, you know, early in the morning at 8.
Madam President, what say you?
It sounds like May the 12th may be the best for everybody.
Okay. Is everyone present in agreement with that?
Yeah. Dr. Cohen, any comments?
Yes.
Okay. Both days work for me, so I'm fine.
So May
I'm good with the 12th of May.
Great.
Okay, yeah. So May 12th, future. And then if we need a June meeting, we will. If not, we'll just work on it from there. And that concludes my executive director's report, Madam President.
Okay, I'm sorry. And then 8 a.m. is still okay for everything?
Yes.
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 Good. Okay. Sounds like we've all got it. All right. Okay. All right. And then agenda item P, call to the public. Are there any public members that like to address the board? Okay. I hear no comments. Agenda item Q, motion to adjourn. Would anyone like to move to adjourn the meeting?
This is Dr. Cohen. I move that we adjourn the meeting today.
Is there a second?
This is Dr. Carpenter. I'll second it.
Okay. Any further discussion? All right. We've had a motion and a second to adjourn the meeting. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Galan?
Yeah. I'm mute. Aye.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 5-0. So this meeting of the Arizona State Board of Optometry is adjourned at 9:04.
Thank you. See everybody in May.
Good job.
Okay, bye.
Thank you all. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.